This is episode 65 of the IDRA Class Notes Podcast.
What's happening in the classroom is really what defines quality bilingual program, and that's where most teachers need help. Here's the key: to have a good bilingual program, there is no way around it. You have to have a very well-informed, deliberate, structured way of delivering instruction in the two languages. That is the key. If you do not know what the criteria is, what the triggers are for you to create a well-balanced bilingual program, then we're not going to be as successful as we want to.
Welcome to IDRA's Class Note Podcast. I'm Bradley Scott, and I want to thank you for being with us today. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you and your comments about this show. So let us know what you think about it and any questions you may have. There will be details at the end of this podcast on how you can do that. And if you like our show, please help us to spread the word and tell at least three other people. And leave a review for us on iTunes. Remember, on our website at idra.org, you can sign up to receive a free email alert that will help you to know when a new Class Note episode is available. And you can sign up for our two free e-newsletters, Graduation for All and the IDRA newsletter. Well, our topic today is Reflections on Bilingual Education Today and Beyond. Dr. Adela Solis, who's been with us before, is an IDRA Senior Education Associate. She is an expert in program planning and evaluation, training and technical assistance, and qualitative research. She has extensive experience in bilingual education and ESL instructional methods, and she's also been working on our transition to teaching projects and helped to form our coaching and mentoring model. She has a master's degree in bilingual bicultural studies from the University of Texas at San Antonio and a doctorate in education with a specialization in applied linguistics from George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. So, Adela, I really want to say to you again, welcome and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Bud. It's glad to be here.
And it's good always to have you here. And I think talking about a topic that is very important, quite current, and one that we need to revisit, I think, in light of all of the educational changes that are going on in our nation's public schools. So we're talking about bilingual education, and I think I want to start off, just to make sure we're all on the same page, by talking about a definition of bilingual education in the United States. Can you give us one for we lay people that we can really get our hands on?
Sure, Bradley. Well, bilingual education in Texas and the United States simply means that kids are educated through instructional program that uses the two languages. Specifically, for kids that are just beginning in the program that are limited English speaking proficient, which were the core students around which we developed a definition of bilingual education in Texas and the United States, for them, it means that they are using the stronger skills, their native language, to learn the core curriculum at the same time that they're learning English. So that is one definition of bilingual education. And that is a very practical use of the word bilingual education. Of course, in other senses, in the United States, bilingual education is just learning in two languages. It's not an incidental way of learning, but it's a very structured way of learning in two languages.
So that leads me, well, I have two questions, one of which is, what does the current research look like around bilingual education since 2000 or 2005?
It's a good question, Bradley, and I'm glad you placed it right around 2000 or 2005. You know that there's a lot of competing models for educating English language learners, and at some points, some people may have want to say that the important thing in educating bilingual education students that qualify for bilingual education is simply giving them a good instruction and teaching them to high standards. But the research that is there across the nation in schools that have been very thoughtfully implementing bilingual program, it shows simply that it works, that a well-structured program works in meeting the educational needs of students in a broader sense. It helps them achieve academically, but it also helps them become bilingual and my culture and my cognitive. And a lot of that research is coming from the dual language programs, and we might want to talk a little bit about
dual language
and bilingual education. But it's a solid base. It is clear that when programs are well implemented, that there is an advantage to regular instruction from the point of view of academics, plus there are other benefits, as I just mentioned.
And so speaking about this, this is curious to me, and I say this as the director of an equity assistance center, concerned about issues of civil rights and equity,
sure,
particularly for English language learners, first kids whose language is not English. Adela, it seems to me, well, let me ask you this question first. What is the difference between a dual language program and bilingual education?
Well, if you go with the terminology and using that as a clue as to what a program is, you would say, well, bilingual and dual language seems to be the same.
It seems to be the same.
On the surface, there are both programs that use the two languages in instruction. The more practical definition of a dual language program is one that is more recent in comparison to a bilingual education program, bilingual education as we just defined it. And that dual language program, by definition, involves several language groups. And one of the language groups are students that are native speakers of Spanish, and in Texas we know that are the kids that typically participate in bilingual education programs. But another important group that participates in dual language programs are English language proficient students. That group of students is typically in the program because the parents have requested it. And at some point, we designed a program. It's a variant, as Albert Cortez calls it. Dual language is a variant of bilingual education. And we created it as an enrichment, as an alternative model where we can educate through two languages a group of students that parents want them in the program. So it has acquired, dual language has acquired, in practical terms, also a definition of being a two-way program, where two language groups, different language groups, are learning together. Whereas
so
in bilingual education, you have one language group, usually native language, kids that are native to that language learning it. And I think maybe you've noticed in your question, you seem to be alluding to a preference or desirability for dual language programs over bilingual education. And I think it has to do with a perception that it's a dual language is a more high-status program, but it is a variant of bilingual education. And if it works better, it's because we're giving it more attention in the way we design it and implement it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adela, I wanted to be a little more demonstrative than that. It appears to me as though people respond in a very positive way to the notion of dual language. That is, a parent whose child is a native English speaker wants their child to learn Spanish, for instance. And so they want to say a dual language program to allow that to occur. And still yet, there appears to me to be a much more negative view of bilingual education. I mean, even to the point that in some states, they have English only. So you don't even think about a child speaking his or her native language or the educational process embracing that child's first language. That there's almost a negative view about bilingual education.
There's a lot of discussion about that, and certainly people write about that. And I think, in the bottom line, it has to do with the prestige of the program. The students that are served in bilingual education, for example, are students that are high-need students, that are low SES students, and we created bilingual education, as you very well know, as a civil right response.
Mm-hmm. Here in the state of Texas.
Here in the state of Texas. And also, as the civil right responses were defined at the federal level through our Office for Civil Rights and Education, for example.
Or the federal courts through Lau versus Nichols.
Exactly, mm-hmm. In the federal courts. So that all of a sudden the mandated program, the fact that it's a mandated program, the fact that it serves students that are not considered high-status students, has resulted in a negative perception of bilingual education as remedial, as not desirable,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as something that keeps kids from learning English. Whereas the dual language program comes from a different direction through a different advocacy group that wants dual language program. That in itself has not just given the perception of a prestigious program, but that perception has being supported through actual resources and time to carefully design and implement programs.
Very interesting.
That's very interesting.
I think that's something that teachers and administrators and those who make decisions about how schools and classrooms operate really need to revisit, really need to think about in a very different kind of way. Because I think that, we are continuing to see students who are, in your words, viewed as low status, mm-hmm. being victimized in the educational process rather than being served and benefited.
And by the way, that's kind of the work that we do. IDRA does a lot of work in the area of bilingual education. And one of the things we've done historically and even recently is to help school districts that are really serious in looking at bilingual education and what it means in designing the right programs for English language programs is to do some long-term planning and have some deep discussions for several weeks and months with administrators so that they understand all these issues about bilingual education.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is very useful because you come out of that process, which we did not too long ago, I think in 2005 in a school district around San Antonio. And we came out of that with administrators, principals primary, very well informed. And they said, now we can make decisions about the dual language program versus the bilingual program. And they'll say, you know, it sounds to me that what you're saying, that if we support the bilingual program, that we can have just as good results as the dual language
Absolutely.
Program, that it's in that one campus and that all the campuses can be doing a good job. Is that correct in saying, this principal was saying? I said, yes, that's correct.
Great. So, Adela, I know that IDRA has many resources on bilingual education. Can we very quickly talk about a couple of them, one of which is the Good Schools rubric that we did through our own research. It talked about quality schools, or at least systems for creating quality bilingual education programs. Would you comment on that? And also, I know you and I have talked in the past about doing that same kind of thing at the specifically at the classroom level
mm-hmm.
and creating programs at the classroom level the way we used to under the old Title VII, for instance.
I love the Good Schools
mm-hmm.
framework. It was a model that was created as a result of our work visiting schools across the nation that were identified as schools that were implementing a variety of successful bilingual programs. And as you remember, during the time that we were visiting and trying to create a picture of what was working in those schools, we came back very excited about the great bilingual programs that were happening in Boston, that were happening in California, that would happen, I mean, in our own state of Texas. And that insight that those of us that were out there visiting schools was the source around which we developed the Good Schools. And we were looking not just at what's happening in the classroom, but what was happening in the entire context of that school that
sure.
was supporting bilingual
mm-hmm.
education. As a result of that, we came up with a good criteria of what is required in terms of policy, in terms of administrative response, all the way to curricular responses. And that framework is what we're using to help schools do a systemic assessment of bilingual education and whether programs for ELL work as well. And I'm excited at the prospects of doing that and looking at more specifically at what's happening in the classroom. Because
mm-hmm.
as you know, what's happening in the classroom is really what defines quality bilingual program. And that's where most teachers need help, is what do I do? I understand what bilingual education is, what a dual language program is. I know what the goal is. I know what resources I need. But here's the key. To have a good bilingual program, there is no way around it. You have to have a very well-informed, deliberate, structured way of delivering instruction in the two languages. That is the key. If you do not know what the criteria is, what the triggers are for you to create a well-balanced bilingual program, then we're not going to be as successful as we want to. And so teachers want that. And I think that if we were to create something of a Good Schools framework for the classroom.
For the classroom.
Level, it would be very good. One thing that bilingual education is not is concurrent teaching, meaning that you teach your curriculum, your lessons in one language, and then you repeat it. That has to be said because there's a lot of misconceptions as a result of lack of information, that if you're a bilingual teacher and you're going to deliver instruction in two languages, you're going to teach the same thing twice. And it's surprising how that has been the biggest no-no in terms of pedagogy, bilingual pedagogy, and some of our teachers still don't understand that.
So actually, in this day and age, in the terminology of the day and age, this is a teacher quality issue we're talking about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So Adela, in 2010 and beyond, given the work that you have done in professional development, raising awareness, improving competencies and skills and capacities for both teachers and administrators, what do you see as some of the important things we need to be doing as we move into the future? I mean, given all of the educational reform that's going on, these notions now in the national culture about raising to the top for all students, bringing the performance of the lowest performing students in schools up to a higher level of excellence. You know, in the context of today, what do you see as our needing to do to make schools work better for kids whose first language is not English?
For those of us that believe that bilingual education is still a very good way, if not the best way, for educated students, what we need to be doing, and interestingly enough, we need to be taking a step back and looking at what was the best period when we had the best models for instruction in two languages. And I think that that period of time was in the 90s, in the late 90s, when there was, interestingly enough, a federal program providing sources, Title VII to be specific, so that we could compete and develop the best models for delivering instruction. We have a core nationwide of good programs, good, well-designed instructional programs. And what we need to do is revisit those. Those of us that are proponents of bilingual education need to go back, pull that out, and show how a well-structured program looks like. Beyond that, we need to continue pushing for high-quality teaching.
Absolutely.
We need to make sure that as we reauthorize the NCLB, that we have resources that can be dedicated to create the best quality teaching, including good teachers, that we can. And so that's one of the things that we need. We need resources. I think we need to continue looking internally within our school districts to see what money's there, to reallocate, reprioritize what we have so that we can dedicate it to bilingual program. That's been the unfulfilled promise of bilingual education is resources. And I think the sad thing about it is that there's always been resources within the school district. We just have not given it the priority that we need.
Excellent point. Adela, you know, I'm so sorry that we have reached that point when we need to wrap up. I want to thank you so much for these insights.
Robin.
And this is a conversation that is once again just beginning in this new era of educational reform. And I certainly hope that I can invite you back to kind of bring us up to date on where things are, how they're moving along, and what we still need to be doing to ensure that we are creating schools that work for kids whose first or primary language or initial language is other than English, and make sure that they reap the benefits of quality education, quality teaching, good schools that work for them as they do for other students.
Right.
Thank you so much, Adela.
You're welcome.
And I sure want to thank all of our listeners for being with us today. I think Adela has given us a lot to think about and to talk about in terms of what we continue to do for English language learners or limited English proficient students or kids whose first language is not English, not only at the elementary level, but certainly also at the secondary level. That's another whole issue that we need to be looking more deeply into. I want to thank you once again. And if you like what you've heard today, please make sure that you tell at least three other people. Give us your feedback on iTunes. And remember that you can visit our IDRA.org website to receive free emails as well as our e-newsletters. And by all means, we'd love to hear your comments, hear from you about the things that we talk about here at the Class Notes podcast series. I am Bradley Scott. I am asking you to take care of yourselves so that you can take care of your students, and we'll see you the next time.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.